The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 453, PAX Unplugged Hotness for 2023. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we are back, and we are back from PAX Unplugged 2023, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Anthony, we were there. We did a thing.
We were there, yes. I'm still here.
Okay.
I was outside this morning. I'm like, guys, where the games go?
That's how much you loved PAX, that you just could not leave.
Yeah. Now it's just a big empty building.
Aww.
Getting ready for some publishing nonsense. Who knows?
Are you sure it's, not because they made you walk around the whole, you know, four city blocks to be able to get to that one entrance?
Oh my god. I don't know who it is. The thing is, it's like somebody was saying, like, oh no, it's the convention center staff with the security. And I'm like, maybe. Whoever it is, figure it out. It's dumb. I don't like it.
I mean, the thing about PAX has always been that they are very overly, but very secure in their all of their security efforts and measures and things like that. So whether it's outside or inside, and I get it. You know, one entrance, one exit, until maybe later in the day where you can kind of escape through the side. Man, that line wrapped around the convention center twice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it was bad. On Saturday morning, especially. Saturday, it was sold out, and it was incredibly crowded.
Yes.
There was nowhere to sit, there was nowhere to eat.
Yeah.
The line, like, I knew people who got in the line around 10. They didn't get into the building until like a quarter after 11.
Sure.
I don't know if it's worse than previous years because we tend to avoid that line pretty well, but it seemed more crowded than normal. It seemed bigger.
Yeah, they don't release official numbers, but having been there every year that they've had it, Friday was, at least it felt, busier than it had in previous years. Part of that.
Yeah, Friday.
Good.
Yeah, no, Friday felt busy. It always feels light, but then this year it felt like normal, not light.
Friday felt like a Saturday. Like there was that many people on Friday that it felt like a Saturday. And then Saturday felt like intense. Saturday was pretty intense as far as people.
Saturday was very crowded. Yeah, I brought my son in on Saturday and he made it about 4 hours, which good for him because I barely made it further than that after I brought him home. Like it was a lot. Sunday was nice and chill. The family day, it wasn't nearly as great.
Yeah, it dropped off on Sunday, but Friday and Saturday, I would wager that it had higher numbers than the last couple of years. It felt packed. It was hot. it was super hot. A lot of people were asking if the heat was on or if it was just that many people there. And the only other thing I could put my finger on is they had this really crazy extensive, you know, Arcana setup. So, like, if you wanted something for Ravensburger, you had to go through, like, this maze of metal pipes and poles to get around. And I don't think that was ever really utilized to its full potential. I think they expected Gen Con people, and they did not see that.
Yeah, the Lorcana, it always had a line. Mm-hmm. And I know that because starting Saturday morning, there was a game that my son wanted from that booth, and I was not willing to stand in the line for it because I was not buying Lorcana. But it was never that long. No. Like, the Gen Con line was, like, an hour long. It was never that long. It was, like, you know, outside the booth, down and into that little metal cage a little bit. So, and they didn't sell out of Lorcana until, like, 3 or 4 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
So, if you wanted Lorcana at PAX, it wasn't that hard to
get. And I think that, like you said, the metal cage, so to speak, I think it was a Hall C or something. Like, you walked in, and that, you know, that line protection structure thing that they built up so that, like, the crowds wouldn't rush the main booth was huge. And it was right up front. It was, you know, it took up a lot of space. So maybe we lost some table space from that. It's possible.
For sure. Yeah. And, like, they put their queuing system in there too, which I think sometimes is in the past has been elsewhere. Yeah. It's hard to say. I don't know what else they could have done. There's a whole downstairs.
Yeah.
And, like,
empty.
I know doubling the space is probably a bit much, but, like, there is an entire downstairs. The convention center has 2 floors. So if they really need to expand, there's a lot more room they could work with.
Yeah. I think that because it was so packed on Friday and because Saturday was so packed, I think having been to all these conventions, all these different places, I understand it's packed. I think that this one, I felt like they could have given more rooms to the aisle. Like, you know, as far as the aisle goes, I think they were much more narrow. They were narrower than they had been in previous years, or at least it felt that way. I know that there was, like, 1 or 2 aisles like, oh, this is nice. I could walk on this, even if there's a large crowd. This one was, like, back to back in some situations. So I don't know if they condensed the space, because, again, no numbers, but yeah, it felt that way.
It was weird, though, because with the big booths, it was still pretty wide. Mm-hmm. But with the smaller booths, yeah, you couldn't walk down those aisles. Like, if people were looking at things on either side, you couldn't get
through. Yeah, that's true.
Like, it was 3 people wide and that was it. Like, even the far end of the Gen Con convention center, it's not that
It's not.
So it was a little
weird. I would like for them to open up other entrances. I understand it takes additional security to do that, but again, in past years, security was so immensely tight, and I think this year was the year that was kind of lackadaisical in some respects. Like, I mean, you almost got shook down. There were signs everywhere. There was people everywhere. This year was a little bit more just walk through. Like, wait, you can come through. But the doors for the building, I think that was a little bit of an issue. I would love for them to open up a second entrance exit just to kind of make it a little more easy to get in the building. Because, again, PAX was great. Philly was great. But it did rain for 2 days. And when it's raining, you don't want to have to walk around several city blocks to get to the entrance.
No. I felt bad for anybody who had to do that. We came in Sunday morning and I was like, please don't let there be a line. And there wasn't, because it was Sunday.
Yes, there you go.
Because I had my daughter with me. I had some of your games with me. And I was like, I don't need to be wet right now.
It's true. So, yeah, PAX Unplugged this past weekend. Great time. Great to see everybody, and we have a whole episode about all the greatness and fun, the ups and downs, the lefts and the rights, mostly because you're walking through that Lorcana line. Anthony, another year of PAX, right? So beyond the lines, beyond the entrances, beyond the heat that you were sweating and the tables that we could not find, it was another PAX.
It was. Yeah. it was another PAX. Yeah, I wouldn't say anything was significantly different than past years. Like, everything we're talking about is, like small things.
Yeah, a little more crowded, a little hotter, a little less table space.
Yeah. People were nice. Things were there. Yeah. Everybody had games. A lot of them sold out. Not all of them sold out. It was like, the same rough vibe and flow, minus the rain. I don't think we've had rain before on PAX weekend. It doesn't usually rain this time of year, honestly. And it hasn't rained like the previous month before this here in Philly almost at all. So it was a little annoying that it rained so much last week, but it did. So we were trapped inside. But otherwise, yeah, it's PAX, man.
PAX. So what did we see at PAX, my friend?
Yeah, so we saw, we mentioned the crowds.
Crowds.
We mentioned Lurkana. There's not much more to say about Lurkana.
Nobody stayed online.
Thankfully. I think.
Nobody,
yeah.
Nobody stole a palette of magic cards, at least not that we know of yet.
That, not yet. Not yet that we know of. So it was a lot of fun. And there was plenty of new-ish games, right? Like, the thing about PAX is you don't get the brand new releases that you get at Gen Con or Essen. You get games that came out at Gen Con or Essen. So, like, the vibe I always get at PAX is, remember all those games that were sold out at Gen Con that you were running around and sold out in an hour? At PAX, there's a million of them. So you can get World Wonders or Three Ring Circus or any of these games that were hard to find. They're all over the place. And then some of those games that came out at Essen, they got those too. So there wasn't like anything, at least not for me, that was like worth like breaking down walls for. Like Direwolf had the new Dune Imperium Uprising there. It's been out for a little bit of time, but they had a million copies because they still had some on Sunday. The Queen Games had ridiculously overpriced copies of all the new Feld City games that they were not able to sell because they were also still there on Sunday. $150 for just a copy of a new game. Like, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? Like, hey, you know how those Kickstarter prices were stupid high? They're even higher now in retail. Like, cool.
I wonder from their point of view, or from anyone's point of view at this point, now, you know, as a company, you're coming to a convention, and in past iterations of conventions and past years, Kickstarter was somewhat of a thing, but now that it is the thing as far as marketing and selling your games, when they come to a convention, how do they manage the Kickstarter extra copies that they purchase to bring to the cons? As you mentioned, these were more expensive, and I don't know if that's good or bad, again, depending on what you feel you should be owed as far as backing the Kickstarter exclusivity, coming to a con, paying for that, but it was odd what the different booths did, and Queen just had like a wall full of their Kickstarter stuff, and it was, like you said, higher prices, and a lot of it's just, you know, variations of each other. Because it's the Felds. It's the Feld Cities collections.
Right, yeah. There's like three versions of each of those games now. Because you have like, here's the full game. And then here's the basic game. And here's the Essential Edition. And even the Essential Edition's like $80. Sure. So, and I, from their perspective, they're like, well, these don't go to retail. This is the only way to buy them if you didn't back the Kickstarter. Like, yeah, but why are you marking it up?
Yeah.
I don't
and that's...
It rubs me the wrong way as much as the Kickstarter rubbed me the wrong way.
So. Oh, I mean, look, I could do a whole podcast on the Stefan Feld City series. I own four of them. I didn't pick up the other two, and then again, more and more stories about that. But again, Kickstarter and conventions, they're so antithetical to each other. Like, conventions are the place that you go to see new stuff for the first time, and yet Kickstarter has kind of undercut that almost completely, because
yeah.
You know, back in the day, we went to Gen Con, or we went to PAX, or we went to Origins, or any of these other conventions to see the new games, to hear about the new games, to like to patiently wait until I guess the flight report from Fantasy Flight to let us know what's coming out, and then you would run back to the booth to see them unveil this new miniature game that typically would fail, but nonetheless, it was exciting, it was special, it was cool, And it was like, it was the highlight, right? What was coming out that day? What was coming out that weekend? How many copies did they have? I'd be able to see for the first time, but Kickstarter kind of preempts all that. So it's like, oh, I've seen all your games already. I've seen the playthroughs, and I've ordered it 2 years ago, so maybe I'll get it. I don't know. So it's always weird when you go to conventions, and a lot of the booths just have the stuff that they had on Kickstarter 1 or 2 years ago. So maybe if you did not back, and now you won't have the opportunity to purchase, I guess. I mean, typically a lot of the companies in their Kickstarter page will give that, add that caveat to it. It's like, we will not sell this retail. And then like little fine letters, like we'll sell it on our website and at conventions. You're just like, all right. So I don't know how exclusive that is, but nonetheless, they were there. The Felds were there. Not Stefan Feld.
The Felds were there.
But his lesser games were there.
Yes, yes. So they were there. No one was buying them. They were way too much money. And honestly, there weren't like a lot of big surprises. Like, oh, that's a new thing I've never heard of. The only one I found throughout the whole weekend, and that doesn't mean there weren't others, but the only one I personally found where I was like, oh, I didn't know that was coming out, is Cascadia Flip and Roll'n'Write. Uh-huh. There's two new games coming out with the Cascadia formula with a Flip and Roll'n'Write, which I'm like, sure, I'll buy it. I'm excited about it in the sense that it's Cascadia, sure. But I'm not like, oh my gosh! So, it's an interesting con, because it's always like this. It's not like, it wasn't a bad year, it wasn't a down year. If this was Gen Con and there was nothing surprising, I'd be like, what the heck? But it's PAX, and it's the end of the year, and it's really just about collecting all the best of stuff that came out in 2023, mm-hmm. and then all the new stuff that is just now becoming available at the end of 2023. So, you know, you had things like Undergrove was there with Elizabeth Hargrave teaching it at the AEG booth, which is great. But hey, guess what? That's a Kickstarter. So not as exciting as it could be because they didn't have copies and it's coming whenever they actually publish it or print it.
Sure.
So who knows, right? I mentioned Dune Imperium Uprising. That's cool and new, but it's also been kind of promoted for the last month and a half because of all the early marketing.
Yeah, stuff. And you could pick it up to other places.
Yeah, yeah, it's not hard to find. So that's kind of the general vibe. I think the only other game that we were surprised by, not surprised because we knew it existed out in the realm somewhere, but didn't know it was going to be there or have a sense of, was Defenders of the Realm 2.0, right?
Yep.
So this is one that, like, I know you immediately kind of latched onto when you saw it, right?
Yeah, no, I was surprised. Greater Than Games is releasing a, and again, we didn't get a chance to play it, so somewhat of a total re-envisioning of the game. So it's different artwork, looks like slightly different game style, definitely miniatures. It has more of a Greater Than Games kind of anime kind of look to it. So that was interesting to see because we, for many years, we had talked to the people over at, well, we had talked to several people over the years about Defenders of the Realm because we always were waiting for the second edition to come out. Eagle Griffin Games, we spoke to the owner at one point. He was like, it's going to come out. It's going to be this amazing second edition. It's going to have this legacy model to it. We're like, oh, it's amazing. And then they never did it. And then they released on, I don't know if it was on their website or on Kickstarter, somewhere on the crowdfunding sites, you could back some upgraded pieces and boards and things like that, which I did. So it was really surprising to see that Greater Than Games actually had, you know, a new version of it. And again, not expecting that Greater Than Games, of all places, would have it either.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty. Like, it's bright. It's got, like, a Small World aesthetic in terms of, like, primary color.
Yeah, it's not the Larry Elmore artwork that was classic D&D to it. So,
yeah.
I think it's good. I looked at the artwork. I looked at the pieces. I looked at the board. Like you said, Anthony, had that very colorful, bright, engaging kind of family sense. I would say the only downside, again, because, again, you can't match Larry Elmore's artwork, period, but I think it looked a little generic. I think it might have an opportunity just to kind of fall away amongst other things, but it's going to be on some, was it BackerKit? Some backing, some crowdfunding site at this time, I guess, some point, February? I think it was February they were talking about.
Yeah, I didn't catch the date, but like early next
year. Yeah, I'm sure it's, if you take a look at our Facebook page, we're a little burnt out from the convention, but I posted, I don't know, 200 pictures on there. And one of the pictures or multiples of the pictures is that setup. So check it out on our Facebook.
It's in there. It's in there. I promise it's in there. So yeah, we'll cover that more when it's up on Kickstarter or BackerKit or whatever the heck it is next year. Another one, too, that we kind of stopped and we looked at but didn't have a chance to demo fully, just because the tables were full, was the new game from Paverson Games, Luthier, which we've talked about a little before, but this is another one that's coming out on crowdfunding in the next few months. So if you sense a theme here, lots of games that have been announced for crowdfunding sites, so we already know they exist. The game itself doesn't exist yet. So it's just people at booths showing off what the game will be in a year or two, which is why it becomes difficult to get excited or review the games at this point, because the games aren't done and they're all prototypes.
Yeah. So. This is from the people who made Distilled, which was there. But again, if you backed it, it's everyone there. This is Paverson Games. So, yeah. So at some point 2024, there will be another Kickstarter thing. I like Distilled. I thought it was a solid game, and this looks better. This looks really interesting. It does have the historical characters from those periods and smaller footprint. Absolutely. And again, there are pictures on Facebook, so check those out.
Yes, please, please go there. There's like 250, 240.
Look, I took a lot of pictures and I got a lot of dirty looks. People are like, why are you taking our picture? I'm like, media. That's it. That's it.
Yeah. I love the candid shot of Elizabeth Hargrave. And in the picture, she's just talking to somebody. But as soon as after you took the photo, she looked over like, what are you doing? Like, it was great.
She's a famous person.
Media, yeah. Coverage, what are you going to do?
And generally, I like that idea of, I mean, I don't know. How would you want to say it? Like, my photographic, you know, like, artistic sensibility is take the picture in the action, in the moment that people are having, and then run to the next one. So, you know, not these kind of stage photos where everyone's smiling and have their mouth, like, drop dead open like they saw the second coming. So, these are real pictures, real action, real gamers, real designers and publishers doing a thing. So, love it, hate it, I don't know. It's there. I've been doing it for 10 years. I think it works. Gives you that sense of the convention.
Yeah. No, I love photos like that. All the stage stuff is annoying.
Yeah.
All right, so that's some of the stuff we saw, and there's, again, several hundred photos if you want to see more of the stuff we saw. But what about the games that we engaged
with? Oh, that happened?
So, yeah, there was games. So, we played a fair number of games. I will say a lot of them were a little bit older. Like, we met meeting up with people that we know, getting older games to the table, just engaging with friends. This is the con at which we do that. Everybody kind of comes together. It's very close to where we all live. But there were a few new games that got a chance to hit the table. One that did not, because every time we cycled by it, people were like stalking the table and jumping into the seats, was Evacuation. I know both of us tried to get seats at this game, and it just did not work out. So one of the hotter games in the first look section, which again, if you don't remember the first look section, they bring in all these games from Europe, stuff that came out at Essen or recently. First chance to play it in the US often. And the people this year, the enforcers, the game hosts, they seem to know the rules to most of these games, which was a pleasant surprise, because in past years, that wasn't always
there. There were less of them, but the ones that they were there didn't know what they were doing. So appreciate that.
Yes. Yeah, no, it was great. But unfortunately, because of that, we didn't get to play Evacuation because there was always someone there to teach people how to play. So we'll get to that one coming up in the future. One game we did get a chance to play, though, one of the big ones, is Nucleum. So this is the new game from Simone Luciani and David Turchi. And we got a chance to play this Friday night. It took, how long did this take? Like three and a half hours?
Give or take. Give or take people having to run off.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there was a lot of pause breaks for that. So this is a game about, and I know like everybody's kind of describing it as like a mishmash of like Barrage and Brass. I would say it doesn't necessarily skew too hard to either of those games, except aesthetically in the sense of what Brass is doing, right? With the, you have tableau of tiles in front of you that represent different locations. You place those on the board, they do things, you power them, they flip over, right? There's definitely Brass inspirations here, but it doesn't play anything like that, which ultimately I think caused more trouble than good throughout the game, at least the first half of the game, because you expect it to work like Brass and then it doesn't, which is not the game's fault. That's just what happens. In the game, though, what you're doing is you are putting out buildings, laying tracks, and trying to power things up using coal and uranium in these nuclear plants, right? And there's a lot of other things going on, right? It's not just that. Brass is very focused and central in terms of what you're doing. This game has contracts that you can complete. It has milestones that you can work towards. It has endgame scoring. In so many endgame scoring. Like, I think the endgame scoring took us a half an hour. So it's a little bit more point salad-y in this sense. Like, you can feel the Luciani and the Turchi in there. But the core mechanic of the game, the thing that you're doing every round, is you're taking these action tiles. You start with five of them. And you're either placing it above your player board to take both actions, or you're placing it on the main board, the map, and you're taking whatever actions match up with the colors of the cities that you're placing it next to. And then those actions let you do all sorts of different things, right? And they chain together with, you know, other various potential things you can do. So the game ends up becoming about managing the resource that is action tiles, because if you place them on the map, they don't come back. And if you have too few of them, you can't do very much. So you have to make sure you're getting enough new ones, balance where they go in front of your board. Your income is determined by how many of those action tiles you place above your boards. If you put too many on the map, you're not getting any income when you refresh. And then there's multiple timers in the game that will determine how long it goes. There's five potential endgame triggers. Any two of them will trigger the end of the game. So if people go crazy on contracts, that's one of them. If people buy up all the action tiles, that's another one. If somebody completes all their technologies, because you all have unique technologies that you can upgrade that give you like special abilities throughout the game. There's a lot going on here. At the end of the day, though, the basic mechanic is just play that action tile and do what it says. And then all the other pieces kind of move around that. So I found it to be a little bit cumbersome in terms of overhead in learning initially. But once you get the flow of the game, you know, like halfway through, it is relatively intuitive to the sense that everything you're doing kind of flows in the same direction. Although, again, when we get to the endgame scoring, I don't know how you prepare for all of those things if you haven't played the game a few times. There's a lot going on. There was things there and I'm like, oh, I scored those points. That's cool. I didn't know that was a thing. I liked it quite a bit, though. I have a copy of this. I had set it up and kind of learned it ahead of PAX with the hope that we'd get a chance to play it. And I'm glad I bought it. So I like, for me, I need to play it some more before I could say it's a play or a buy, but I will say that I'm glad I have it and I do look forward to playing it more.
Okay. Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, as you start out with, I think there are certainly elements in this game, at least aesthetically, some functionally, but or mechanically, but at least aesthetically, that play like Brass and Barrage. So
yeah.
You do not need to know those games in order to be able to play this game. In fact, I think that can and will actually get in your way. So I think that's part of the aspects. Like, as you mentioned, I think these little action tiles, which, again, if you're thinking Brass, they're like little railroad tiles, which they are, right? They're transportation tiles to go back and forth. So these typical transportation tiles to create your network are also what allows you to do the things in the game. And they're essential to your gameplay. So having the right types and the amount that you need to be able to play to the board to build your network, but also to be able to use for actions, but also to be able to, when you use them for actions, go to your main board so that you're able to get all of your upkeep, all your refresh, you know, resources and meeples and victory points. So you certainly need them for a lot of things, and they are certainly in short supply because there is a constant fight back and forth of, you know, where do I need to put this? You know, like,
right.
I need it out there for my network, but I also need it to use the action, but I also need it to be able to ensure that I have enough so I get as much upkeep as possible. So that primary aspect is really challenging. It's also interesting because there is a market where you could pick up more of those tiles, but again, you need to have the opportunity and or ability to be able to do so, and you're only going to be able to do that from those tiles. So that's the rub of the whole game, more or less. Beyond that, as you mentioned, Anthony, the end game scoring is massive. There's just a lot of it. And like practically everything scores. It also has one of these, I guess, board mechanics where, and we've seen this in a lot of games, and I'm blanking at the moment, but there's dozens of these games where at a certain phase during the game, a random tile that's placed at the beginning of the game scores a certain thing. So, you know, like road score or building score or certain enough meeple score. And these are all random tiles that are set up at the start of the game. I think Tiletum, that game where... Tiletum. That game has those kind of random scoring for the different phases, and those are kind of put out there. That's one of many games like that. So this has that kind of thing, but they all score at the end of the game. So based upon what's out there on the board and what, you know, what scores more or less, depending on where it is on that tracker, you want to focus more towards that. So I don't think at any point any of us knew where we were as far as scoring is concerned. No. Certainly if you have very good board placement, you know, as far as where your things are, excellent. But again, because there's so many point salad scoring opportunities, plus those bonuses on the right, plus 12 other things that are happening in the game, plus your own individual play board. So even if it would never happen, I could see and remember based on the board where everyone's points are, I would never be able to see someone else's, you know, tech track to see what they're scoring off and what they're, you know, what points they have. It's just too much. You play the best game you can, and then you score it. And then you see where you land as far as scoring is concerned. I don't think I ever had a sense of where I was as far as scoring is concerned. I don't think anybody did. But I don't think it necessarily brought down the fun, because just like I was saying, it has some brass and barrage elements to it. It also allowed elements of those games to be played in a much more broad, loose environment. It wasn't like brass or barrage. If you didn't do the right thing or you built somewhere and then someone didn't build next to you, you're dead. Like that's the game, right? Yeah. This was very much like, we want you to enjoy brass and barrage in a more open, welcoming format. So, hey, you want to start a network? Throw a tile down or throw a building down. You want to jump across the board? You could do that too. That's your network, but that's also your network. Don't worry, you don't have to pay for other people's tracks. You have to pay for the generators, but it's a money, which by that point in the game, you already are in a good spot. So yeah. I enjoyed the game. I don't know. I'll have to play it a bunch more to know if the point saladness of the game and also the looseness of the track, because we were playing with somebody and he's like, oh, I built a tech level of my track, so now my railroad tracks here are multicolored, so I don't have to worry about my player board. It wasn't me or you, it was somebody else we were playing with. He's like, I don't have to worry about money. I don't have to worry about getting income for points or meeples. Everything is now everything. And I was like, well, that's fine, but also that's kind of not fun, right? The rules of the game are what makes the game fun. If at some point you can break 2/3 of the rules of the game, I don't know. It doesn't seem much fun. Like, I did have one of those things where, like, I could generate power anywhere. I don't need anything. Like, I just randomly generate power. I'm like, all right. we're throwing the whole theme out the door. We're just like, it's magic now. I'm like, all right.
There's a lot of instances of that in the game based on the rules. Like, it is like what you said. It's like they looked at Barrage and Brass, and like, these games are very fun, but they're also punishing. And if you make a mistake, you're stuck with that mistake for a very long time, and you're probably going to lose. I didn't get that feeling in this game, because early in the game, I went to the far side of the map, and there was no power until about halfway through the game, and I still won. And it was a mistake. I shouldn't have started there. I knew that fairly quickly, but I'm like, well, this is where I started. This is where my network is. And I could move my network and build somewhere else, but I don't really want to. This is where I put all my turbines. So I'm staying here, whereas one of the people we're playing with put it in the bottom corner and had immediate access to power. But I still made it work because the game is very forgiving in that way. Like, the technologies give you a lot of ways to shortcut things. You can throw a track down anywhere, like you said. So I think if you're like turned off by, if you like heavy Euros, but you're turned off by those games that are just like punishingly brutal if you make a mistake early. This is not one of those. So if you're thinking like, I don't like Brass or Barrage because of that, that's not a reason to avoid this game. Like, I'm not saying you'll like this game necessarily, but it's not a good reason to avoid this game.
I would kind of equate it to, in a way, Agricola and then Caverna. Because Agricola, with Brass and especially Barrage, if you build the wrong things in Barrage and you can't benefit of other people using your stuff, that's going to be a hard night for you. So like Agricola is like that. Like if you don't build properly and get all the things that you need, it's a bad time. But Caverna comes along and it's like, you could build anything and anything is food and points come from everywhere. And you're like, oh, thank you, Caverna. But sometimes things can be a little bit too loose. And I felt like this, I think that might be the one criticism about this game that people might find is just, it's too loose.
Yeah.
And the point scoring is just all over the place. And the tech boards, which are fun, are also like way too powerful. Like it's just, it's a lot. And a lot of times in our game, a lot of people who already had played the game kept going back and going, oh, I was supposed to get a point, or I was supposed to get a money because of this tech and this tech and this tech and this tech. So there's a lot of stuff on the board. And then also, I think you mentioned, Anthony, which wasn't familiar with, was also the idea that, and again, this is how in the dynamics of the game, how you're able to be able to drop a star in a certain section on that track allows you to put out, is it the Nuculum, Anthony, that little cube, that Nuculum in the
it turns on the power plant.
So you get to choose where that goes. So for example, my area didn't get one until the very end of the game. So some of that's luck, some of that's planning. If you're able to place down there first and you're in that particular area. Again, that's neither good or bad. That's just how the game plays. But again, it is that kind of a little more randomness as far as gameplay is concerned.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So that's Nuculum. We'll be talking about it more. We've got end of the year stuff coming up. I think my preliminary rating on this is like high play, low buy. I need to play it more. I want to play it solo too, because I've heard decent things about that. But one play is late at night is not enough.
No, definitely not. Yeah, I'm around a play right now. So I'll definitely play it myself again and get to table a lot more and see how it plays out. But there's a lot to like there, at the very least.
Right. All right. Another game we played that was pretty popular is Star Wars Unlimited. Now, they did have this available for demo at Gen Con as well, but it was very hard to get a table at Gen Con. It was much easier at PAX. My son and I stood in line for about 10 minutes, got a table, we're able to learn the game pretty quickly. So this is the new TCG coming from Fantasy Flight, which means it'll exist for about a year and a half and then go away, because that's what Fantasy Flight does. But it is a Star Wars-based TCG in which you play head-to-head, and I played as Darth Vader and the Empire, and my son played as Luke and the Rebels. And the way the game works is, every turn, you have the option to place one of the cards from your hand face down as a resource. Resources are just resources. They are not lands. They're not energy. So it doesn't have like the variability of like Magic or Pokemon or any of those other games. You have multiple types of resources based on the type of card you want to play. All resources can power anything, right? And you build that up. So it's like Hearthstone in that way, right? You just have a pool of energy to work with. And then you play cards from your hand to either the ground or the air combat side. And you will be fighting it out on those sides. And either of those locations can attack the opponent's base. The base has 30 health and you're trying to kill it. So first person to kill the other person's base is the winner of the game. You also have a hero that's in front of you. Obviously, we played as Luke and Vader, but I'm sure other decks will have other heroes. And these heroes are very powerful. If you get enough resources in front of you, you can flip them over for free and they become a unit on the map. So in my case, Vader needed 7 resources out, which takes 6 turns of the game because you start with 2. And he flips over and he's like a 5 attack, 8 health, right? So like a lot, and he can do a lot of things. And so the game is very interesting. I had a lot of fun with it. It's a quick, it's back and forth. I can see it being like one of those games that maybe it could run a little long, but not crazy long. You know, like it's going to be 15 to 30 minutes in that sweet spot for a TCG. I could see where the variability is going to come in. It felt very thematic. I like the artwork that they've gone with for this. It's kind of like a little bit raised comic book style, but not the Fantasy Flight House style they've been using for years for Star Wars. It's like a new style, which I appreciate. My son, absolutely in love with the game. Just over the moon. It's like, we went in there, I'm like, you can buy a game when we're done today. Let me know what you want. And he's like, I want that. I'm like, it's not out yet. You gotta wait till March. It's also a TCG, so I can't just buy you the game. You can get a starter set, and then you gotta buy your own packs. So, you know, playing the game, I was like, I wish this was an LCG, because this would be fun if I could just buy boosters for it every month, or expand, get special decks, whatever. It's a TCG, which means very expensive, secondary market nonsense. And again, Fantasy Flight does not have a strong history of supporting these things. So I'm not going to get my hopes up. I've already pre-ordered a starter set and one booster box, and that'll probably be it, because then me and my son can play out, you know, two or three decks and just play back and forth. And that's probably all we really need. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very good game. I'm excited for it to exist. So I just wish it wasn't a TCG. I'm tired of these things. Like, they're so expensive, no more. And the market can't support it. It won't succeed because the market can't support it. So that's a separate rant. But the game itself, and you know what, that's part of it, is like such good mechanics and interesting decision making space. I wish it wasn't wasted on, you know, like this hyper capitalist system. Like Magic the Gathering, brilliant game. I wish it wasn't a CCG, right? Similar here. Like, I don't know if this rises to the level of brilliant, but I thought it was very good. And I do look forward to playing more with my son. I don't look forward to being tempted to buy a bunch of stuff for it.
How does it rate against the recent Star Wars deck builder game, the two-player version?
It's more interesting. Like, the Star Wars deck building game is great because it's a contained box and it has a lot of interesting decisions. But this has multiple combat arenas. It has multiple decisions you have to make around resource allocation. There's like a timing mechanism to when you make your big move and how you get there. So it's more strategic, whereas Star Wars: The Deck Building its game is almost purely tactical. So I like that. I like both games a lot, but I think this is going to be a more strategic planning game. And I can see it being the kind of game where you could have a really strong meta that goes in two separate directions. You have ground and air. So you build out two separate metas and you try to like have enough leeway in there that you can kind of maneuver the deck in the direction it needs to go based on what you draw. I don't know. I just wish it wasn't a TCG. That's all I can say.
Did you get to play the Dark Vader card, I Am Your Father, that hits for 7 points unless the other player goes, no?
Yeah, that seemed like he was joking, but then he didn't
laugh. That was weird.
So the guy running the organized play for Fantasy Flight, he described this card. It's my favorite card. I'm like, that's not a serious thing you're describing. Is this real? Apparently it is. There's a card in the Dark Side deck where if you play it, it's super powerful unless the other person yells no.
All right, we'll have to see when it comes out.
Yeah. I'm going to love the tournament rulings on that card. Someone's going to be like, excuse me, Proctor, he didn't yell no. I'm like, I said no. Like, you didn't yell no. Nobody heard you. No one heard. Did anybody hear him yell no? No, you didn't yell no.
Weird. Very weird. It looked good, and everyone was really excited to jump online for that. And so, yeah, that was great.
Yeah. All right. Another game you and I both got a chance to play was Evil Corp. This was a 1v1 or 2v2 dueling area control game in which you are racing for 2 victory points. So it's a bag builder, and you each play a corporation of evil, I think, was the theme. So you have like goblins and wizards and all sorts of bad stuff trying to terrify the villages the most. They a little belabored on the theming, but the artwork was nice. But you're drawing tiles from your bag, 5 at the start of every round. You're placing them out into the spaces in front of you, and you're trying to vie for control of 2 separate arenas. There's 2 villages there. If you pull the control enough in your direction, you move up on this track, and if you get to the end of the track, you get the victory point. Once you get 2 victory points, you win the game. So it's like a tug-of-war type of game with some elements that kind of build over time, because it is a bag builder. So if you get your bag is built out properly and you build a nice engine for it, you're probably going to win, because that's how the game works. I thought it was interesting. I like bag builders and I like these tug of war back and forth games, but also I don't like games where I don't get to do things, and this is one of those.
Yeah, cute artwork, reminded me of Small World. As you mentioned, it's a different mechanics come into play. So the bag building, the area control, the special abilities, and a little bit of marketplace. Seems like it could play with anybody, as far as, you know, family's concerned or gateway gamers are concerned. Nothing too complicated, other than the fact that, like, depending on the number of players, or obviously the iconography that comes into play and how you put those things out and manage your bags. So, yeah, it was fun game.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Another game I played with my son at the Hatchet Games booth was Nautilus Island. So this is from one of the designers of Draftosaurus and The Loop, Sea Salt and Paper. And it's a fairly basic, just almost a drafting game of sorts, where you are going to move your worker to a location and either take the cards that are there or play a number of cards from your hand based on how many cards are there. And you're trying to build out sets of different types of treasure. As you build those sets, you take these scoring tiles to kind of amplify the value of those sets. It's quick. It's back and forth. It's 2 to 4 players. It takes like 20 to 30 minutes. Very light, but kind of perfect sweet spot for younger children or like preteens with short attention spans, which describes both of my kids. So it was a fun, interesting time. I wouldn't say it's something that you would play with your gamer group necessarily. It's not even necessarily a filler level game. It's definitely more like family weight, but as a family weight game, I had a good time with it.
Nice.
Other game that we played at that booth is In the Footsteps of Darwin. So this one has a little bit more going on with it. So on your turn, you're going to move the Beagle, Darwin's ship, around a grid of 3x3 tiles representing different animals and people from the life of Darwin. You're going to take one of the tiles in that row or column, and based on the number of the tile, whether it's 1, 2, or 3 away from you, you will move that many spaces with the ship. You have little tokens that let you kind of move the ship extra. You have opportunities to pick up extra scoring tiles if you cover up one of the tiles later, and you're placing them into your own personal tableau based on the type of animal. So whether it's a bird or a mammal, a lizard, or an insect. And then there's like color coding as well based on the continent that they're from. So you have Africa and Asia, Europe and Australia, I believe. So you're trying to build sets effectively, and the scoring points based on the sets that you create. You get extra points if you complete a column or row. You get extra points if you complete, get these compass tiles. It's pure set collection, but the theme is interesting. The artwork's really strong. It's like these beautiful illustrations, kind of like from the journal of Darwin. And it's got a lot of interesting elements. My daughter asked a lot of questions about like, who's that person and who's that person, which is always fun in a game like this based on historical elements. My wife and I actually really liked this game, but my daughter, because she got to pick a game as well to take home, which we'll talk about in a minute. She was like, it's fine. It's a little too much about the points. And I'm like, ugh, Abby, hey, come on. That's what we're doing here.
She's a great thematic girl.
Yeah. So, but I enjoyed it a lot, actually. So it's something I might consider picking up down the line just because I actually had fun with it. The game that she did end up picking up is the exact opposite of this game. So this is Catastrophe, a tale of 9 lives, or a game of 9 lives. And it's, I don't even know how you describe it. It's like Munchkin-like, but like also has a bunch of random activities in it. So you are cats, and there's one dog, and you start on level 9 of this tower. And at the very bottom of the tower, after 1, is the Grim Reaper. And you are, on your turn, almost every action you take, going to be knocking each other down the tower. So using up your lives, your 9 lives, getting closer to the Grim Reaper. So if you are the last cat standing, you win. And so some of these cards are simple. A lot of these cards are simple. You play it and it says, pick an opponent. They have to roll a die. If they don't roll a five or a six, they lose a life. Very basic, again, Munchkin level actions here. But then they start to get a little crazy. Like, they have these action cards that come out, these catastrophe cards. And it might be like, everybody stand up and take a step back from the table and then throw a die. And if the die lands on the card, you gain a life. And if it falls on the floor, you lose a life. Something silly like that. Or everybody stare, look at each other in the eyes and meow repeatedly until you either blink or laugh. So it's full of these silly kid activities that my daughter loves. So this is why she picked this game. I will say, as far as this type of game goes, because I've, over the life of being a parent, there's been several of this type of game. This one has the most effort put into it from the designers. The artwork's really interesting. There's a lot of really clever, fun cat puns. Some of the little challenges they give you are actually legitimately funny. Some of them are not. So it definitely falls in between. I would say this is like a beer and pretzels type of game if you're adults, or if you have kids, this is a good fit for children. It's not a bad game. I don't dislike it. There are some of these I actively dislike. I don't mind playing this, but it is what it is, right? It's not trying to be anything more than that. So this is for families of children, I think, for the most part. And with that in mind, I just kind of wanted to mention cats. Cat games were everywhere, right? So there was this one, Catastrophe. There was Wizard Kittens, which is another game my daughter really liked. House of Cats. There was a fourth one I'm trying to think of. There was like Cats versus Corgis was another like fighting game. There was a lot of cat
games.
Nine Lives.
Boop.
Boop. Boop is the other one. Yeah. They had a giant version of Boop there.
They did.
So I don't know if cats are the new zombies or what's going on there.
Yeah, I think that's how we came down with it, right? So you had zombies, you had pirates, you had Vikings. I guess the original was ninjas, probably.
Right.
But it seems like cats are the new zombies.
There were a lot of cat games. And
a lot of cat games, yeah.
I didn't realize it until Sunday because my daughter was like, I see a cat across the hall. Let's go find that game. I want to play it. So, yeah, if you like cats, it's a good time to be a board gamer. I don't know.
Good.
It's no Isle of Cats, but you know, cats be everywhere. So that was some of the stuff we played. A lot of other games we've, you know, either picked up or have a chance to kind of take a look at here in the next few weeks. We'll be talking about them in future reviews ahead of our end of the year discussions. But yeah, PAX was fun. A lot of interesting things, and I won a big stupid box, so that was fun.
It's always good to win a giant stupid box. I think that's the best part of going to a game convention is winning giant stupid boxes of things. Because that's, you know, it's board games, man.
Yeah, it was a real monkey paw situation. So, yeah. There was this woman and her child. They spent a lot of money at one of the booths. They got a bunch of raffle tickets. They gave them to my wife. And it's like, here, use these. We're leaving. And then my wife gave them to me because she was leaving. And 2:59, we're like, you and I are going back into the hall, and I'm like, oh right, I have these raffle tickets. I guess I should go stand there because I told my daughter I would. And lo and behold, I win the grand prize, which is a several hundred dollar box of Pokemon whatever. So it was enormous and fun to carry around, but thankfully we had a place to put it.
I tell you, it's a thing.
Yeah. No, it was a weird event, but also fun. And eventually I got home and I'm like, where am I putting this? I got to figure out what to do with this. So, but yeah, no, it was really cool. So that's PAX Unplugged. It's a unique convention in many, many ways. Especially for us, cause it is so close to where we live, and you know, it's not all the new games, not all the hotness of what's coming up, but a lot of like, this is what's coming to Kickstarter next year, and also here's all the stuff that came out this last year. It's like a weird in-between space, and so you can kind of tell that from the games that we end up playing.
Absolutely. All right, everyone, so that's everything for this time. Until next time, this is Chris,
and this is Anthony,
and we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.